Savvy Business Radio, drawing out the best from our guests with our host, Christina Nitschmann.
Our guest today, Karen Martin, president of global consulting firm TKMG Inc., a leading authority on business performance and lean management. Today, she shares her insightful latest book, Clarity First: How Smart Business Leaders and Organizations Achieve Outstanding Performance. Find out more about Karen and her company at tkmg.com and take their free quiz at clarityfirstquiz.com. Hi, Karen. Welcome to Savvy Business Radio for our Heartbeat of the World segment. How are you today?
I'm well, Christina. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on the show.
Oh, you betcha. I'm really grateful to have you share your expertise and wisdom and your latest book, Clarity First: How Smart Leaders and Organizations Achieve Outstanding Performance. So important, clarity. I don't think it gets talked about. We did have someone not too long ago talk about his book on clarity, but it's so important to really get clear on things and what does that really mean to be, to have clarity in your business, in your life, and you're going to share that. But before we go there, my first question to all my guests are really, what brought you to the world of entrepreneurship?
Well, my family was pretty business oriented, and I grew up in a business family, and I had a science, a yen for science, and so I followed the whole science path and ended up getting my undergrad degree in microbiology. But I think, I know it's been very helpful for me being a scientist and the kind of work I do now with companies. I think always business was kind of percolating in the background. And it was when I started climbing the ladder in corporate and trying different areas of operations and sales and marketing and legal that I started really getting my appetite wet on business. And then I always wanted to do my own things so I could be my own boss. And my whole family's independent business owners. And I just think some of it's in my blood.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what's really cool when you grow up in a family like that, that's entrepreneurs and business owners, is you see a different route. You don't see, like my mom told me in high school, I loved science. It was my favorite. I wasn't very good at it, but I love chemistry. I love physics and all of that. And one of the things that really scared me my last year of school is like, I'm going to have to stop this and do a J-O-B and just go to one job for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I mean, and my mom said, well,
right?
Say it again.
It sounds miserable, right?
It does. And my mom was like, okay, when you graduate, I want you to get a job immediately. None of this sitting around me taking care of you stuff. You're to get money immediately, make your own income, la, la, la. And I was just really, really depressed, the idea of leaving school, because I love the different topics, the learning different things, it always being challenging. My mom's like, no one in my house is going to be an ongoing student forever.
Well, and I think that's why you see career students that just never do leave school, because it is, you know, when if you love to learn like we do, it's a stimulating environment to be in. So I see that.
Yeah. And what's really cool though, is that, you know, I don't think a lot of people realize, Karen, but that you can take that mind of curiosity, and it doesn't have to be in the four walls of university or college. You can have that in your everyday life and constantly be searching for new and understanding, like to always broaden your horizons and understanding. It doesn't have to stop with, you know, school.
Yeah. And one of the things that I discovered in doing the research actually for The Outstanding Organization, which is a bit of a prequel to Clarity First, clarity was one of the chapters of the four foundational behaviors or conditions that businesses need to establish. And clarity, that chapter generated far more emails and online, you know, messaging and stuff like that than the other chapters, much of it very emotional.
So explain that. Why would it be emotional? I'm curious.
Well, what I got were, and I mean, the most dramatic thing I got was from an engineer I knew at a client I was working with who wasn't a guy prone to showing emotions, big burly guy and just, you know, kind of a tough guy in a way. And he sent me this very emotional email saying that when he read the clarity chapter, he actually cried because he realized the degree to which lack of clarity in his company, in his department, and in him himself was dragging him down. It's really very much like having handcuffs on to not be operating with clarity. And it's, you know, it's a productivity drain. It's a psychic energy drain because it takes a lot of work to try to figure things out when there's no clarity.
Yeah.
And it's just difficult. I mean, it's difficult to function in a fog. And that's what a lot of companies do. That's what a lot of, you know, people, unfortunately, have gotten themselves into habitually dealing with. So I knew that I had to write the book focused only on clarity, and I thought it'd be easy, and it was so not easy.
Wow. Why not?
Very difficult. You know, clarity is this elusive subject that it took me personally many, many months to wrap my mind around, because a lot of people were equating clarity with focus, which I now understand they're not the same. They're related, but not the same.
Okay.
A lot of people relate clarity with transparency, related, not the same.
Okay.
It's just clarity and the truth,
yes,
related, not the same. You know, so it's just weird. This weird thing, and it's, you know, it's a verb, it's a noun, it's a, you know, it's just, it's everything. And it wasn't easy to figure out how to distill all that complexity and make it very easy for a reader to understand. And I think I hit it pretty well, because it's, you know, getting a lot of attention and, and award nominations and stuff like that. So hopefully I've nailed it to some degree.
Yeah. And do you think that your studies of the sciences has helped you really kind of break it down in easy bites for people to understand as well as yourself?
I think it very much helped to have that scientific background, because it's always about finding the facts. And that's, you know, what clarity is based on. I did have to lace an awful lot of psychology into it to really understand the barriers to clarity.
Interesting.
And, you know, I'm not a psychologist, but I read a lot. I talked to a lot of people that are psychologists. I've, you know, explored my belly button, contemplated my belly button, to try to figure it out. And, I don't think I'm done. I think I hope this is just the beginning of us as a society looking at the role clarity plays in top performance.
This is so interesting to me. Do you feel clarity has become lost with a lot of, not just businesses, but with people's lives and personal lives individually? Just the way we're structured. I mean, we had a guest on recently who talked about the diversion of all the social medias and the modern gadgets and gadgets that really kind of take us away from being here and now. Do you think clarity has become more lost in our individual lives now in this modern lifestyle?
I do. I think it's always been a problem. I think that we have some exacerbating circumstances that have come into our lives now, social media and 24/7 news cycles being part of them. I do think, though, that, you know, when I drilled everything down to one thing, I mean, it's hard to take a complex subject and drill it down to one thing. But when you do, at the center of all the lack of clarity is fear.
Really? Wow. Fear. That's an emotional thing. So why would fear play any part of clarity? That's interesting to me.
Well, because when people are fearful of what people will think or what people will say or what people will do, it makes it so that we can sugarcoat, we can dance a little. We're losing authenticity as individuals and as organizations anytime we move away from just the facts. And part of what I'm trying to bring to the table is, look, you know, the facts don't have to be hurtful. They are sometimes hurtful if you read them that way. The truth will set you free is a phrase I learned when I was very, very young. Yeah. And I think that that's ultimately true. The truth will set us free no matter how bad the truth is, no matter how scary it is. The truth is necessary.
Well, what I love about this, and I recall many years ago, one of my favorite mentors saying that in order, like you say, I have a place I want to get to. I want to get to California, or in your case, I want to build a business that's thriving and I want it to look like this. Well, in order for you to get to wherever you want to get to, you have to first be truthful about where you really are today, now, right here. And if you can't be truthful where that is, good, bad, or ugly, I mean, all the bits, you got to be able to not just say the pretty parts, but all the parts in order to say, okay, here where I am now, completely no hold bars, and here's where I want to get to. Now, what do I have to do differently in order to get from A to B?
Right. And what's fascinating about this is that the predominant approach I use with companies is lean management, and it's the full package of lean management. It's not just the process design work that a lot of people know about.
What is lean management, by the way?
So lean management is a management approach that we have learned primarily from Toyota. Toyota was fortunate to start learning from W. Edwards Deming, who was a U.S. quality guru. I use that term, knowing that people that love Deming don't like using the term guru, but you know, he was the master of quality. And Joe Duran, also from the U.S., went over to Japan after World War II and started teaching them these quality principles and precepts. And Toyota happened to be one of the companies that just grabbed them and ran with them. And then they started beating our butts in the automotive industry, and people started saying, what's going on here? And a team from MIT went over and studied them and wrote a book called Lean Thinking, which was the, you know, kind of beginning of us beginning to peel back the layers of what makes Toyota so darn successful in every way, shape, and form. Not that they don't stumble, but that they're, you know, really one of the most successful companies in the world from a performance perspective. And so lean is a term that the MIT team gave to this way of managing the organization that, you know, it's kind of a, it has a little bit of baggage associated with it, because back in the 80s, lean meant layoffs, and that's not what this form of lean mean. It just means that you're operating with, you know, the absolute essential elements to be highly, highly successful and nothing more. And so it's lean in process, it's lean in, you know, the amount of data you need to make very, very good decisions. It's lean in just getting rid of all the muck, you know, the muck that slows companies and people down, and the organizational drag that that all creates. And so at the core of lean management, this is one thing I started putting the two and two together that drove me to write the book Clarity First, is that at the core of lean, it's really all about clarity. The principles, the philosophies, the practices, management practices, the tools, they're all about surfacing clarity and getting transparency to how an organization operates. When we go ahead.
Now, I felt something before. You said people often contribute clarity and focus, clarity and transparency is all being the same, intertwined, but they're similar, or they're part of the package of clarity, but they're not clarity. Explain, what is transparency as opposed to separate from clarity? What is it?
So transparency, so you first have to be clear in order to have transparency, but you could be clear and choose to conceal it. And so you know, I have to talk about these different types of clarity pursuers and clarity avoiders, and then the clarity blind as these three different buckets of the way people and entire corporations function, just generically. And so you can decide to be a clarity avoider and be very, very clear about the truth of a situation and not allow it to be transparent to others. So that's the difference between clarity and transparency.
Now, why would someone do that? It seems like that would be counterintuitive to moving in a company in a position that would be helpful to it if you're not letting everyone know what's really going on and being clear with everyone on it.
Yeah, well, it's a great question. There can be very good business reasons to not have full transparency. For example, if you're approaching an acquisition, if you're approaching something where, you know, you don't necessarily want to reveal prematurely because someone's going to get an upper hand in a negotiation. That's kind of, savvy business.
But got it.
No pun intended.
I love it though.
And then, you know, on the other hand, you can also have people that are transparency oriented to a fault, where they do show all the cards prematurely and they aren't, you know, so there's this, you know, intention matters. And if you're intentionally withholding information that's going to harm someone, that's where it starts getting closer and closer and closer to, you know, well, eventually criminality, if it goes all the way. And so, you know, you can have everything from, you know, sociopathic behavior all the way to criminality. And there have been plenty of businesses that have gone all the way to criminality. So, you know, what we usually see is almost this clarity blind approach, where people don't even understand that what they're doing is hiding from the truth and not being transparent. And there's no good reason to not be transparent. So I'm trying to surface all that and help people, you know, think about that and what the ramifications are for not operating with pure clarity and transparency.
This is fascinating to me. I don't recall the book I read many, many years ago, The Five Steps to Truth. Now, I don't remember if that's the exact name, but the whole point of the book was that there's five levels to truth telling. And I don't recall all five, but I recall the very first one being telling the truth to yourself, that you can't begin to tell the truth to others, your family, your job, your whatever, until you are first truthful with yourself inside. And then, you know, then you start telling the truth out loud or whatever. But often where it all begins is telling the truth to yourself. You can easily often justify and make reasons why things are a certain way that isn't, just right. to rationalize to yourself the direction you're taking, but it's not the truth. You're not telling the truth to yourself. You're lying to yourself, which then eventually makes it easy to lie to everyone else.
Right. And, you know, entire businesses become very good at this because of all kinds of pressures that they're facing. If, you know, publicly traded companies have shareholder pressure and, you know, reporting to Wall Street every quarter, there could be boards that are, you know, less interested in learning the truth. And so that shapes the way the senior leadership team behaves. You know, one of the things that we find more and more in organizations is that when we go in and let's say an organization wants to do some sort of transformation, level of transformation, mm-hmm. the first thing we have to do is get very, very clear about the current state, back to your earlier point.
Yes.
Well, when we do that, we have to set this very safe environment for everybody to be able to say, okay, it is what it is. It's where we're at now. Now we want to go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But what happens is there's all the psychology that starts coming out where people, leaders especially, feel like, oh, well, then I wasn't doing my job as a leader if that's the way we're performing. And oh, this and all that. And then they start, you know, trying to your point, justify mm-hmm. where they're at. And it's hard work. The work we do is not easy. It's messy business mm-hmm. to get into an organization and help them become comfortable with the truth. And if they can't get comfortable with the truth of the current state, we can't help them move. Mm-hmm. You just can't move forward without, it's like having blinders on mm-hmm. and it doesn't work. Try as you might, it doesn't work. So, yeah.
Well, I've come across that myself as a consultant. One of my very first, contracts I was going to do with a corporation, they were in a huge amount of debt and they had made a lot of business mistakes. And I sat down and said, here's what I'm seeing. And here's what I see from just a quick standpoint of things that need to change immediately. So you stop bleeding money. And he's like, well, we're not changing anything we're doing, but we want you to come in and make it all better. And I'm like, that's not realistic. You can't choose to say, I want everything to be different, but I'm going to make zero changes.
Right.
Yeah. Because if you keep doing the same thing, you're going to get the same results and eventually go out of business.
Well, yeah, it's true.
Yeah. So why do you think it happened that so often people don't want to face the truth or make changes? Now, you did mention, yes, the truth is uncomfortable sometimes. But why would someone hold on to something that clearly is not working and not want to try to make maybe small steps even?
You know, I don't know. It's a great question. I do know that it's the fear of the unknown. I do know that it's fear that, you know, whatever path is unknown is going to be worse than where you're at. I mean, I do know that. Why that fear exists, I think actually probably gets down to how these individual leaders were formed as infants and their early experiences in school and their early experiences in jobs. You know, I think that I'm pretty sure I know mm-hmm. that babies are born these, you know, precious truth-seeking, truth-telling beings. Mm-hmm. And that what happens is not only do we start learning that the truth can be unsafe, and that starts, you know, creating habitual ways of operating in the world and showing up in situations, but it also starts drumming out the curiosity that we all are born with. It's natural.
Yeah.
And so, you know, fast forward to adults running businesses and adults, you know, in frontline positions in organizations, and you suddenly have this baggage from the past that is, you know, in the way of success for the future.
Yeah.
And it takes, you know, someone, like I hope I've done something in the book Clarity First to help people realize, you know, at least start reflecting on, are they operating that way? And, you know, do they want to keep having that limitation to their own success based on that? Or do they want to face the music, start trying to figure out, you know, how to turn that corner and start becoming more courageous? Yeah. And once you get that courage to understand that the truth's not going to hurt you, you know, it's like weapons hurt us. The truth doesn't hurt us. And so we just have to, you know, think about what lack of truth is actually doing to us. And hopefully most people will choose to at least move the needle a bit.
Yeah. Because it's true. When a couple of years ago, I was beginning to realize that I wasn't moving as quickly as I could in my business. My husband said, well, here's a couple things I think that could change to make things better. And I didn't like that because I'm comfortable where I was. And I was like, no, but this seems to, no, I think you could do better if you did this. And I was just like, I kind of pushed against him for a while until I realized, you know, what's the worst that can happen? I try it. It doesn't work. We try something else.
Right.
But, you know, sometimes even trying something new, the smallest thing could be like, oh, no, no, we're messing with the cartwheel here. No, no, no.
Yeah. And there are things that we can do to create what I call a safety net so that mm-hmm. it's not so scary to try something new. You know, for example, simple things like for a company that has always operated a certain way, and now, you know, we suggest a different way of operating for them. There's, you know, you can do a pilot. You can do a limited mm-hmm. experiment. And that's the other thing is we view everything you do in life that's a change from where you're at as nothing more nor nothing less. This is where my science background comes in as an experiment. It's not set in stone. It's not like you can't turn back from that. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You have to adjust. Mm. And so, you know, the problem solving methodology that we primarily use, we use many, but we primarily use this methodology known as plan, do, study, adjust. And so it gives you the freedom to try it. Just try something. It needs to be a well formulated experiment. It can't be just, you know, throwing spaghetti on the wall and hoping it sticks. But, you know, with a thoughtful experiment, you have a hypothesis, you see if it proves out. If it doesn't prove out, then you abandon it, you try something new, or you adjust it and you try it again. You know, it's we have a very practical view of life that takes some of the fear out of it. Mm-hmm. And there's ways that you can remove there's other ways we help remove fear as well.
Yeah. And one thing I've heard a lot from businesses all around is that leadership is something greatly missing. How much does getting a hold of clarity build leadership in an organization?
It builds leadership practices that are necessary for success, for sure. So I don't know about the chicken and the egg, though. That's the thing. Your question's really
what comes first?
Yeah, because you know, I think you have to have leaders that are interested in the truth and uh-huh. value the truth in order for them to want it. Mm-hmm. I call it intestinal fortitude, you know, or will, you know, you have to want it. And we do, you know, we do run across leadership teams that are by and large not wanting it. And we don't work with those organizations because, you know, back to your example, if you don't want to make any changes, then there's not much I can do for it. And there's plenty of companies that mm-hmm. want it. And, you know, so that's where we go. So I don't know, it's a chicken and the egg, and it's a personal journey as much as an organizational journey.
Mm. And where does someone be in? Because I know from the information we're getting here today that this can help not only any business out there wanting to grow their business performance and get better clarity in their business, as an individual, it can help people. Because how many people do I say they just are in a rat race? They get up, take the kids to school, they're running here, they're running there. And it's almost like there's so much running around that they're even not clear on where they want to be in their life.
Well, it does take time. And I say that several times in the book, gaining clarity takes time. Mm-hmm. And I also talk a lot about, well, not a lot, but some about mindfulness. And in fact, the last chapter, which is about the individual, it's called You, the name of the chapter. So it's all about organizational clarity. And then the next last chapter is You. Now, how do you fit into this whole thing? And mindfulness becomes a big part of how every individual needs to have the space to get clear about how they're really feeling and get clear about what the real current state is and get clear about where they want to go. That doesn't happen in the rat race.
No, it means stepping back. What's interesting is one of my favorite mentors used to say, often people come to me and say, I don't like this, I don't like that. I want a different life. I'm like, great, what is it? Show me what your life would look like. What do you want? And they can't give me clear answers. They don't have the clarity, but they are often clear, at least on what they really, really, really don't want to see in their life or in their business. So I said, let's start there. Write down everything you don't want that you're maybe seeing or don't see, but you don't want to end up in your business or life. Write it down. What don't you want to see in your life or business?
Yes, clarity is essential for getting what you want, but you have to take the time to define what you want in order as the, you know, as the first step. I'm a big believer in manifestation, and a lot of people, you know, come to that word thinking it's a little woo-woo.
Yeah.
You know, manifestation doesn't happen by just going, "I want this." You know, I mean, like, it's going to, you know, it you have to work for what you want for, what you want. But it starts with, to your point, very much so, starts with getting clear about what it is you want. And the minute you get crystal clear on what it is you want, bam, doors start opening, things start happening. Now you have to take advantage of those, but it's just, you cannot possibly perform at high levels and get what you want if you don't know what it is you want.
Yeah, I totally get what you're talking about. And it's interesting when you said that, when you finally get clear on, boom, this is what I really want, this is the direction I want to take, and you're focused, doors start opening. And I found that totally in my own life, building Savvy and other experiences as well. But it's often funny that when you start getting clear on saying, okay, this is what I want, some people around you will start to go like, well, maybe not now is not a good time. The economy is not just shaping up. Maybe you don't want to take that action right now. You'll get maybe disparaging voices that I say, listen, now I have the focus. I know the direction I want to go. I'm going to take those doors, see where they lead. And often that one step in front of another is what opens other doors that you didn't even expect.
Well, yeah. And if you look at some of the businesses that are failing right now, some of the large companies, you know, most of them try to be all things to all people. Mm-hmm. And so the risk of getting, so you have to be clear that you're getting clear on a focused position, not a, I'm clear, I want to do this and this and this and this and this. you know, that level of clarity is not helpful because it's, you can't possibly be all things to all people. Well, maybe Amazon can. I don't know. We'll see. Since Bezos just, you know, got himself into a little bit of trouble, which I actually loved what he said this week or last week about, you know, Amazon will fail. You know, he's a smart guy, and that is true. You know, all businesses eventually, most businesses at least, eventually meet their demise because they no longer meet the needs of the marketplace. But, you know, Amazon is certainly, you know, trying to take on the world. But I do believe the way the company is structured, they're still quite focused on each one of those areas. And so, it's a fascinating business model that I love watching.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing about business. It's ever evolving and growing. And as the needs of your customers change, you've got to be willing to jump in there and you know, change up and not stay kind of stuck on, well, we do it this way, this is how we always do it. And well, how you always do it might not work for your customers right now. And if you're not willing to make the change, I know there's some other brand new baby in the woodworks ready to come on out and take that lead and run with it for you if you're not willing to change.
Right.
And that's what happened to a lot of legacy businesses that were around for a long time. And now things have changed, maybe become more online, more digital. And if they're not able or willing to take that leap into the digital arena, then other players come into the arena.
Yeah. And there, you know, there's certainly pacing is an important thing. You don't necessarily want to be the first one out of the gate. Being second might be better and safer because you can let the first people kind of figure out what the model needs to be, and then you can take it and then evolve it from there. So I don't think everyone needs to be in the lead. In fact, I'm not. I mean, everything I've done as a business person and as an individual, I've never been the very first to the table. And I've been a little, not a late adopter, but I've been a sit back and watch adopter, and then I jump in.
Yeah.
And because I like people to figure it out. It's too much work for me to figure it out.
Exactly. Well, one thing, one of my, what was the name of that thing? What I learned about flying, there was a segment in a magazine, and what was great about it is that as a pilot, you're like, you know what, let me watch mistakes other pilots made so that I don't make them.
Right.
I'd like to not make those mistakes.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, this has been so fascinating, Karen. I know we could go on for hours, but I don't want us to leave without people finding out how they can get a copy of your book, Clarity First, and find out more about you and your organization.
Okay, great. Thank you. So clarityfirstbook.com is probably the easiest URL to go to. And there's links to ordering through whatever bookseller you prefer. My publisher is McGraw-Hill. And then we also have a quiz to help people see what their baseline is. It's called clarityfirstquiz.com. So I recommend people take a look at that. And that'll also provide insights into what the book's content is. And so you can always take that kind of no commitment approach first. And then hopefully buy the book if it resonates with you.
Cool. And where is the website? Where do you have a specific website for the book or for yourself?
So the company, the firm is TKMG, which used to be the Karen Martin Group, but we've reincorporated as TKMG.com. And so that's where you can get to the firm. And then there's a book link there too. And also we have a ton of free webinars. Ooh. If people want to go onto the site, there's a webinars link as well that are recorded. Lots and lots of different topics on operational design and leadership and those types of things, and podcasts and interviews. It's a pretty information heavy website, so people can go there.
Yay. Well, this has been so fascinating and a wonderful interview and sharing. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you so much for inviting me. This has been really fun.
You betcha. Thank you, Karen, for coming to Savvy Business Radio.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Savvy Business Radio broadcasts worldwide via a large podcast network celebrating business owners, entrepreneurs, influencers, and successful individuals. Find out about our paid sponsorship opportunities or how to become a guest. Call 732-474-7375 or email Christina at SavvyBusinessRadio.com.